Before I begin, I think it's only fair that I disclose a conflict of interest. This week, I made the worst painting I have ever produced. I looked at the blank canvas with the confidence of a Silicon Valley tech bro announcing a revolutionary AI product, skipped every sensible step in the creative process, no sketch, no color study, no planning of any kind, and deployed directly to production. This was the outcome, or shall we call it a visual war crime that has now permanently lowered the property value of this room, and in that sense, it has something important in common with several billion-dollar data center projects, both appear to have been produced under the working title LOL 2026. I have deliberately left it hanging behind me for the duration of this video because if I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes criticizing billion-dollar strategic failures, it seems only fair that I am judged under the watchful gaze of one of my own. The people closest to me were not sufficiently upset about this monstrosity, so I'm going to need the perfect strangers of this audience to endorse my retirement from visual art. I trust you'll be honest, the comments are open, please be brutal. As evidenced by this painting, my ego is currently as inflated as a tech valuation, and it definitely needs a pin. In this video, I'm going to cover three stories that, on the surface, have nothing to do with each other. A tech CEO's 20-minute meltdown on live television, a billionaire accusing the Pope of working for the Chinese Communist Party, and a wave of US politicians losing their elections because of data centers. But all three are symptoms of the same thing, an industry that has spent so much time selling the future that is forgotten to notice the present falling apart behind it. And if that sounds dramatic, well, so is this painting. On July 1st, Palantir CEO Alex Karp appeared on CNBC's Squawk Box to discuss his company's new partnership with NVIDIA to build AI infrastructure for the US government. That was the plan anyway. What followed was a nearly 20-minute televised meltdown, complete with stuttering, nervous backtracking, flailing arms, and a steady supply of digressions so abstruse that the host appeared genuinely concerned for his well-being. It had the distinct energy of a man trying to explain quantum physics while actively being hunted by bees. Karp was supposed to explain Palantir's deal, but instead he launched into a sprawling broadside against the entire AI industry. He called the token-based pricing models used by OpenAI and Anthropic effing insane. He said something has gone completely wrong with how AI is sold to enterprises. He called the pricing structure a wealth tax on businesses. He demanded that viewers pick up the phone and call any CEO in private, say Madman Karp is on TV saying we're livid, and see, they're twice as livid as me. When the CNBC anchor interjected and said, "You sound pretty angry," Karp snapped back and said, "No, this is the voice of American business that is being channeled through me," which is a terrifying thought because if American business sounds like that, it desperately needs a kiss on the forehead and a bit of a nap. At multiple points, he veered into whether elite universities would accept him as a professor, which is apparently an aspiration his parents still hold for him. My parents hold a similar hope for me, but I feel I'm just not old enough for that yet, considering the greatest professor of all time, other than my dad, is Professor Dumbledore, and I simply haven't mastered the facial hair required for the tenure track yet. Karp asked the host if they were off camera. They were asking him to just wrap it up, but he just kept talking. Legends say he is still talking to this day, whispering about enterprise architecture into the cold, empty void of the studio after the lights go out. Now, I have to be fair here. Buried underneath this chaos, Karp was making an argument that isn't entirely without merit. His core claim is that enterprise and government customers want to own their compute, their model weights, and their data stack, rather than renting access through API token pricing from frontier model providers. He asked, "Are we really going to outsource the battlefield of this country to the consensus view in Silicon Valley?" He argued that companies are frustrated in private, but won't speak publicly because they fear upsetting their AI vendors. There is a kernel of something real there. Owning your own infrastructure gives you sovereignty over your data and your costs, but the practical reality is that compute is just not easy to come by. The reason companies like OpenAI and Anthropic are still operating at a loss is precisely because the infrastructure required to run frontier models is extraordinarily expensive. Not every company has the capacity to build or maintain its own data center. What Karp is essentially advocating for is either widespread adoption of open source models, which are improving, but not yet at parity with closed frontier models for many use cases, or a fundamental shift in how compute is provisioned and priced. Both of those are valid long-term directions. Neither of them is helped by screaming about them on live television while the hosts try to cut to a shot of Air Force One. This painting and that interview have one thing in common. Both began with irrational confidence and absolutely no pilot study. The difference is that I accept responsibility for my failure. Karp called himself the voice of American business. I'm just the voice of someone who should never have been allowed near acrylic paint. But Karp's performance didn't happen in isolation. It happened 2 days before his co-founder said something significantly worse. On June 30th, Palantir co-founder and billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel sat down alongside political scientist Francis Fukuyama for a panel titled Humanity at the End of History. During the discussion, Thiel accused Pope Leo XIV, the first American-born pope in the history of the Catholic Church, of being a Chinese communist agent, which is a logical leap so spectacular it makes you wonder if Thiel's data analytics software is currently using the same decision-making framework that led me to believe this color palette was salvageable. His reasoning was that the pope's first encyclical, Magnifica Humanitas, a 42,000-word document released in May, called for international regulation of artificial intelligence, warning that AI heightens the risk of dehumanization and that the pursuit of profits must not lead to choices that systematically sacrifice jobs. The encyclical also warned against autonomous weapon systems and declared that AI must be disarmed. Because the Pope's message could influence Americans but is unlikely to be taken heeded of in China, Thiel argued the encyclical would slow down only one side of what he framed as a race between the US and China to advance AI. Therefore, Thiel concluded, the Pope is working for the Chinese communists because nothing really screams Marxist revolutionary quite like the Bishop of Rome. The Aspen audience laughed, the Vatican did not respond, and why should they really? This is not Thiel's first confrontation with the Holy See. In March, he delivered an invitation-only lecture series on the Antichrist in Rome, just blocks from the Vatican, which reportedly unnerved Vatican officials and prompted two Catholic universities to publicly distance themselves. Imagine being so exhausting that an institution that has spent 2,000 years perfecting the art of theatrical drama and flawless tailoring looks at you and basically says, "Sweetie, you're trying too hard." Thiel has previously argued that the Antichrist could manifest not as an individual, but as a world government that seizes power by promising to protect humanity against existential threats, which is an interesting position for the co-founder of a surveillance company that provides AI-powered intelligence tool to governments and militaries worldwide. Talk about conflict of interest, right? At the same event, Thiel also claimed that Anthropic, which he described as a woke liberal company, is winning the AI race and would rig the 2028 elections using its AI models to completely outwit Elon Musk's efforts through X. Anthropic declined to comment, pointing to a blog post on election integrity and political bias. And Thiel, presumably embarrassed by how little he appears to know about AI, has reportedly created a foothold in Argentina as a backup country, just in case everyone in the United States found out that he still thinks The Matrix was a documentary and that LLM actually stands for a large lunch menu. This, by the way, is the sort of contingency planning that has historically done an extraordinary amount of heavy lifting in expressions of patriotic confidence. Now, as somebody who was born in the Vatican, let me just say it very clearly, leave the Pope alone. The man is successfully running a 2,000-year-old global enterprise spanning billions of souls. He does not have time to debug Peter Thiel's late-night paranoia about vampire blood banking and AI apocalypse cults. I read Magnifica Humanitas in full. I watched the live stream when it was released because I'm probably one of the Vatican's biggest groupies, and the document is not anti-AI, it is not calling for a ban on artificial intelligence, it is calling for collective responsibility, for measured development, for the protection of human dignity, for regulation that prevents the worst excesses while preserving the potential. It warns against autonomous weapons, it warns against mass surveillance, it warns warns against displacing workers without care for their livelihoods. It's something we've discussed many times on this channel. It was also in the letter that I sent to Pope Leo last October. And the Holy See has been engaging with the AI industry directly, including notably collaborating with Anthropic on questions of AI ethics. This is not a reactionary institution shouting from the sidelines. This is an institution trying to participate in the conversation by asking the experts themselves. Calling the Pope a Chinese agent because he thinks AI should be regulated is, and I'm trying to find the most measured way to say this, a bit of a leap from an encyclical about human dignity to an accusation of espionage. I slashed my painting when I realized it was beyond saving. Thiel's approach to public discourse appears to be very similar, except he seems to be slashing the Pope. While the tech CEOs were melting down on television and accusing religious leaders of foreign intelligence work, something quieter but arguably more significant was happening across the United States. On July 2nd, Utah State Senate President J. Stuart Adams, one of the most senior politicians in the state, lost his primary elections. Former Box Elder County Commissioner Lee Perry conceded his primary race the same day. Both had backed the Stratus Data Center project, described as one of the largest in the world, backed by Shark Tank investor Kevin O'Leary, planned near the Great Salt Lake. The project would have required up to 9 gigawatts of power. Just to put that in context, that's more electricity than the entire state of Utah currently uses, just so a few thousand people can generate hyper-realistic images of Elmo fighting Darth Vader in 4K. Priorities, everyone, please. And this is not an isolated incident, of course not. According to Data Center Watch, $64 billion worth of data center projects across the United States have been blocked or delayed by local opposition. In Cascade Locks, Oregon, voters recalled two port commissioners who had supported negotiations over a proposed data center. The project was subsequently canceled. In Warrenton, Virginia, all four council members who voted to approve an Amazon data center were voted out over two election cycles. In El Paso, Texas, a recall petition was filed against a city representative who voted to keep a Meta data center incentive deal. In King George County, Virginia, the board chair accused Amazon of hiring a company to dig up dirt on people and declared that the country was ready to go to war. And honestly, nothing unites local American politics quite like the shared bipartisan dream of turning an Amazon data center into a very expensive, very warm community tomato farm. The opposition is bipartisan, 55% Republican, 45% Democrat. On the left, the concerns center on environmental impact. On the right, they center on tax abatements and corporate subsidies. Both sides agree on the basic grievance. These facilities consume enormous amounts of electricity and water, drive up utility costs for residents, and are often approved without adequate public consultation. A Pew Research survey of more than 8,500 U.S. adults found that Americans are far more likely to view data centers negatively when it comes to their impact on energy bills, environmental strain, and nearby living conditions. And data centers consume an average of 1.8 liters of water per kilowatt hour of compute energy, rising to 4.3 liters in air-cooled hot regions. For communities in water-stressed areas, this is an existential concern, not just some policy abstraction. This is what the AI backlash looks like when it stops being abstract. It's no longer AI might take jobs someday. It's why is my electricity bill higher now? It's why is my water table dropping? It's why did nobody ask us before approving a facility that uses more power than our entire state? The backlash has gone physical, local, and democratic, and it's costing politicians their entire careers. Professional artists produce sketches, engineers run stress tests, urban planners conduct environmental impact assessments. I looked at a blank canvas and thought, nah, first attempt, gung-ho, no sketch, no study, no restraint, no rollback plan. Several billion-dollar data center projects appear to have followed the exact same methodology as me, except their vision requires 9 gigawatts, public subsidies, and a county meeting where everyone looks like they're about to riot. And yet, in the middle of all of this, the meltdowns, the papal accusations, the recall elections, the painting, the technology itself is doing something extraordinary, unlike this. In 2024, by the way, AI researchers were surveyed about their predictions for when AI would achieve specific milestones. The consensus was that AI would be capable of writing publishable mathematical theorems by approximately 2050 and would achieve Putnam Fellowship level performance, that's the most prestigious undergraduate mathematics competition in North America, by around 2033. Both happened this year. In February 2026, researchers at ETH Zurich and INSEAD documented that large language models had achieved fellowship-level scores on the 2025 Putnam exam 7 years ahead of expected predictions. In May, OpenAI announced that one of its models had disproved a central conjecture in discrete geometry, an Erdos conjecture that has stood for decades. We are not looking at incremental improvements here. If normal tech progress is like a car company adding backup cameras 1 year and heated seats the next, this is like someone accidentally inventing teleportation in their garage. We didn't just get a slightly smoother ride, we bypassed the journey entirely. These breakthroughs have arrived so fast that the researchers who laid the initial bricks didn't expect to see this kind of architecture stand for decades. And also on the efficiency side, there are signs that the energy problem is not permanent. For most of AI's recent history, making a model more capable meant using proportionally more electricity, double the capability, double the power bill, basically. That's called linear scaling, and it's the reason data centers are consuming so much energy right now. But we have begun to break this pattern. Researchers at Tufts University published a neurosymbolic approach combining neural networks with structured, rule-based reasoning that achieved 100 times less energy consumption than standard AI methods while actually improving accuracy. And just in April this year, the Digital Applied AI Sustainability Report documented further breakthroughs at the architectural level. Mixture of experts is a technique where instead of activating the entire model for every single query, the system routes each request to only the specialized portion of the model that's most relevant. It's kind of like consulting one doctor instead of assembling the entire hospital every time somebody gets a headache. Key value optimization reduces how much the model needs to remember during a conversation, cutting the computational cost of each response. Together, these approaches have achieved something that even a year ago seemed unlikely. Per query energy is no longer scaling linearly with model capability. You can now get a smarter model without a proportionally bigger electricity bill. That is a big deal. The compute problem is real, but it is not static. People are working on it and they're making serious progress. I say all of this because it would be easy, and I see it in the comments every single day, to watch the meltdowns, the papal accusations, the recall elections, the $64 billion in blocked projects, and conclude that AI is a failure, that large language models are just stupid, that the technology doesn't work. That is not correct. The technology is advancing at a pace that confounds even the frontier researchers. Capabilities that the world's leading AI researchers predicted would take until 2050 arrived in 2026. That is not nothing. That is not stupid. That is extraordinary, which makes it all the more remarkable that the people in charge of deploying it are currently screaming on CNBC and picking fights with the Vatican. But, and this is the distinction that I think matters more than any other, the technology being extraordinary does not excuse the deployment being reckless. These are two separate things. An LLM disproving a geometry conjecture is definitely a triumph. A data center consuming more electricity than an entire state without public consultation is a certain failure. A neurosymbolic system cutting energy use by 100 times is, of course, a breakthrough. A CEO screaming on live television that the industry's business model is broken is kind of a confession. All things are true simultaneously, and the people who flatten this into pro-AI versus anti-AI are missing the only conversation that actually matters. How do you deploy extraordinary technology responsibly? AI timelines are widely non-linear. Some capabilities arrive decades earlier than expected. Others, like the compute efficiency problems, like reliable reasoning, like the ability to verify your own work, remain stubbornly difficult. That unpredictability is precisely why measured, careful, human supervised deployment is not optional. It's not nice to have. It is the only responsible approach to a technology that is moving faster than anyone's ability to predict where it's going. This painting and the AI industry have something in common that I think is worth naming. Both began with genuine enthusiasm and a martini. Both skip the careful, deliberate steps that separate ambition from execution, and both produce results that fell dramatically short of what was imagined. The difference is accountability. I documented the failure, accepted responsibility, and display the evidence publicly, which incidentally is already a higher governance standard than several AI companies have managed this year. I am not pretending it is good. I am not calling it a strategic pivot. I am not telling you that this painting sucks because the Pope is working for the Chinese Communist Party. The AI industry has not yet reached this level of honesty. A CEO goes on live television and has what observers are calling a nervous breakdown, and his diagnosis is that the problem is everyone else's business model. A billionaire calls the Pope a Chinese agent because the Pope suggested that maybe, just maybe, wild idea here, a $1 trillion technology should be deployed with some consideration for human dignity. Politicians are losing their careers because data centers were approved without asking the people who have to live next to them. And throughout all of this, the technology itself keeps advancing quietly and brilliantly in ways that deserve better stewardship than it's getting. As the Pope's encyclical argues, and as I have been saying on this channel for some time now, this is a moment that calls for collective responsibility, and by that I mean all of us, big tech, me on YouTube, everyone watching this video. AI is not going anywhere. It is happening to all of us, for all of us. The capabilities are arriving faster than anyone predicted in some cases, and the maturity to deploy them responsibly is arriving slower than anyone hoped. Picking sides, pro or anti, and arguing ad infinitum is easy. It is also useless. What is needed is measured development, prudent strategy, humans in the loop, and a fundamental recognition that the stakes involve real people, real communities, and real consequences that outlast any quarterly earnings call. Unlike big tech, my painting has had better post-mortem governance than several billion-dollar AI companies. We have to do better. I'll leave you with one question. If every failure in this video started with someone skipping the careful steps, what do you think happened when entire companies tried to skip the humans? The answer involves Ford, 900 AI cameras, and a very expensive lesson. I'll leave a link here. Thanks so much for watching. I'll see you in the next one.